So let's get started. What is your full name?
Stephen J. Bigelin.
And why did your parents select this name for you?
According to what my mother told me when I was young, she wanted to name me David because David was her favorite name for a boy or man. But my dad said, no, we're going to name him after my father. We're going to call him Stephen. But Mom said, how did we get Stephen from Silvio? That was Grandpa's name, Silvio. He was an Italian immigrant.
So you're named after your grandfather?
Allegedly, yes.
But I don't know if Silvio is Italian for Stephen.
I don't think so. I know Esteban is Spanish for Stephen, but right. I'm not sure what the Italian would be.
So, and when were you born?
September 22nd, 1949, in Oak Park, Illinois. I like to say in the shadows of Frank Lloyd Wright, which
like
could
that.
Account for my interest in
history,
old buildings
and
historic preservation.
What did you find yourself wanting to be when you grew up?
When I came to DeKalb to attend NIU in 1967, I had my heart set on being a high school history teacher.
Did you have a history teacher in high school that influenced you?
Bert Hageman. Mm-hmm. He was head of the history department at McHenry High School my senior year. And in the fall of 1966, he asked me, have you started sending out college applications yet? And I said, no, I really haven't. He said, you must go to DeKalb to attend NIU.
Really?
And when you are old enough, go to McCabe's Tavern and look for where I carved my initials in one of the tables. Never found his initials, but...
Wow, so he was...
He was my high school historical mentor.
Oh, and so he must have obviously gone to NIU.
Got his master's degree at Northern.
So what was your favorite toy growing up?
My mother hated animals.
So no pets.
The only pets I could ever have growing up were a goldfish and a parakeet. And the only reason why she bought the parakeet was the pet shop promised her that it had a defect and could not fly. So I had a stuffed dog, brown dog with big flappy ears that I called Fluffy. And I had him until I was 13. We moved from Chicago.
Oh.
Left him in the attic of our house in Chicago.
So what, did you like school as a kid?
I was always a good student. Never been very athletically inclined.
What were some of your favorite subjects?
History? My worst subject was always math and science. One semester, I think it was when I was in seventh grade, I flunked history. My mother never let me live it down.
So she was probably surprised when you went and studied history for college. And so where did you go to grade school?
Frederick Funston Public School at 2010 North Central Park in Chicago.
And do you know who the school is named after? What was his name?
Frederick Funston. He was an obscure Union general in the Civil War. The school was originally built in 1895, three-story brick building. It was named for Otto von Bismarck. Bismarck School. The neighborhood was so anti-German during World War I. Of the school, and they came up with Frederick Funston, obscure Union Civil General. The Chicago Public School System celebrated the 100th anniversary of the school being in use. I remember from the third floor windows of the school looking east, way off in the distance, we could see the parachute tower from Riverview Park.
And where did you go to high school?
1963, when I graduated from Funston School in Chicago, we moved to Wonder Lake, Illinois, up in McHenry County. Wonder Lake had a grade school, but not a high school. We were on the east side of Wonder Lake, so students going to high school went to McHenry Community High School. And from the time I first started at McHenry as a freshman, the principal and other administrators kept telling us that before we graduated in 4 years, there would be a new high school built. Didn't happen until the year after we graduated. But I student taught in that high school in 1971.
So I know that you went to NIU, and then so you came back to student teach for your undergrad or was
undergrad,
it for your master's?
Undergrad.
Because you got both degrees at NIU, right?
Yeah, bachelor's and master's. Had the bachelor's in June of 71 and the master's in June of 75.
And did you like student teaching?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
And the kids liked me.
Why didn't you, did you choose to be a teacher?
The high school teaching market in the early 70s was so tight, it was next to impossible to find a job.
Who were some of your childhood heroes growing up?
Superman. I've still got a large carton of Superman, Batman, and Zorro comic books from the 1950s in my apartment.
So you're a big comic book person.
Until they raised the price of comic books from 10 cents to 12 cents. I did not think comic books were worth spending 12 cents on. Now I'm told there's several dollars.
Right.
Bought them at the corner drugstore.
Yeah, pick up your literature.
Yeah.
You were saying so did you have a parakeet?
Had a parakeet. I named him Pretty Boy.
So did he talk a lot?
Didn't really talk a lot.
Not really
like
true.
I said, could not fly. And died one time when my mother was cleaning out the cage and he fell out of the cage on the floor. And don't ask me how many goldfish I had over the years. They died like crazy.
What was your religious life like growing up?
Mom and Dad got married in Catholic Church. Mom had been a devout Catholic since she was a girl. Dad fell away from the church. The only time he ever went to church was for weddings and funerals. Not even Christmas, not Easter.
Nope.
No regular church holidays.
And what congregation did you attend?
In Chicago, our church was Our Lady of Grace. It was, I forget what street it was on, but it was about two blocks north of Fullerton Avenue. I think off the top of my head, if I remember right, it was built in 1928. It had a small sanctuary in the basement and a big domed upper sanctuary. Made my first communion there, made my confirmation there, and then after we moved to Wonder Lake when I was in high school, I was an altar boy at Christ the King Catholic Church. And I was still an altar boy when I first came to DeKalb at Newman Center.
Were you ever mentioned in the newspaper growing up?
One time, I think it was in seventh grade, I think it was about this time of year in the spring, the school had a special cleaning program. I forget exactly what it was, but not only was I and a few other kids mentioned in the paper, we had our picture in the paper, and I managed to get a copy of it for myself from the principal.
When did you learn to drive? Who taught you to drive?
When I graduated from NIU in 1971, my parents bought me a used Chevy Bel Air, but they wouldn't let me drive it. Finally wound up, 2 years later, using reverse psychology by my father. I told him, if I'm ever going to get a job, I need to drive. I hired a driving school to teach me how to drive. And it turned out the car they had bought me had belonged to one of my high school history teachers. When I told him later about having bought the car, he told me all the little quirks about the car.
And I'm sure you have impeccable parallel parking skills. And
hate parallel parking with a passion, unless it's an end.
What world events had the most impact on you? I mean, you probably saw a lot.
Probably the assassination of John F. Kennedy. That happened my freshman year in high school. And the day he was shot was in study hall right after lunch. The office turned on the PA system in the school so that everybody could hear the news of what was going on. And then 1 o'clock went into algebra class, and that was when they announced he was dead.
What was everyone's reaction?
Very somber. A lot of kids crying.
And then do you remember Lee Harvey was shot then?
That was on a Sunday morning. Kennedy was shot on Friday the 22nd, and Oswald was shot on Sunday the 24th. We had just come back, my mother and I had just come back from church that morning, and we turned on the TV to see what the latest was on the assassination and everything, and that was when Ruby came in and killed Oswald.
Any other world events?
I don't know if you'd say world events, but I was a big space race buff.
Yes.
Loved outer space.
Yes.
Would have loved to have gone into astronomy. It would require too much science and math.
Yes. Did you watch the moon landing in 1969?
I've still got, in a closet in my apartment, which I haven't played in decades, a multi-volume record collection that Time Life Books put out on the American Space Program.
That must have been awesome to witness, too.
Yeah.
Especially because Kennedy wanted that so badly.
Yeah.
Tell me about your last name and your family's surname.
Bigolin. B-I-G-O-L-I-N. My father always told me when I was growing up that the family didn't go back any further than 1825. Didn't say if that was in America or Italy, but right. since the both of his parents had come over from Italy around 1910 or thereabouts, I figured it was Italy. Not true. We go back in Italy to the 1400s, wow. according to Christopher Nissen, professor in the Foreign Languages Department at NIU, who for several years was researching a mid-16th century Italian poet, Giulia Bigolina, who he said was an ancestor of mine. She went by her maiden name and had to use Bigolina instead of Bigolin. When he finally ended his research into her work, he gave me one of the books that he had written about her. And when I first met him, this was at least 15 years ago now, he was dating a woman from the village of Selvassano, Italy, mm-hmm. about 40 miles west of Venice, which was where my family yeah. was from. And he showed me a book that was for sale in Selvassano about a Dutch muralist by the name of Lambert Sustris, who in the 1600s did murals in a home that an ancestor of mine had built. It turned out to have been a wealthy merchant uh-huh. in Venice, prospered to such an extent he was able to build a great villa, which I've got pictures of. I think it was around 1539, if I remember right. He hired Lambert Sustris mm-hmm. to do the murals in the villa, and many of them are included in the book, and I can make out which ones they were, but the whole book is in Italian. Can't read it. About Selvassano. As I said, Christopher Nissen was dating a woman who worked at the Selvassano Public Library. Unless you're Italian or an art historian, you can't get in the Villa Bigolin. And he says the name is actually pronounced Bigolin, not Bigolin, in the Italian way. And they had a book at the library, again, the one mm-hmm. that I got through him,
yeah,
all in Italian mm-hmm. with the pictures and things of the villa yeah. that Lambert Sustris had done. And he was only able to buy a copy because he knew the librarian. And he showed it to me, and I said, is there any possibility you could get me one? Even though I can't read it, I can at least make out
the pictures
that are in the villa. And right. he said, I'll see to it. It was hand-delivered to me by the librarian who became his wife. She had grown up in Selvassano, had never known any of the family. I was the first member of the family that she ever met, and she hand-delivered it to me here in DeKalb. But in 1960, my dad's youngest sister, he had six brothers and two sisters, and her husband, who lived in Libertyville, mm-hmm. were planning a trip to Selvassano. Dad had been there during World War II, so Aunt Mary asked us to come over to talk. She wanted to pick Dad's brain about yeah. what the place was like during the war, and he told her, and she right. said, oh, it must have changed in the last
right.
week. Came back, it was exactly the way you described it. Nothing had changed in 15 years. And supposedly, again, someone on the family tree back in the 1400s or 1500s had been a professor of some kind at the University of Padua,
wow.
which is one of the oldest universities anywhere in Europe.
So, obviously, you're a historian. But how did you choose that profession?
I like, for a long time, I've liked to say my life revolves around things historical. And it has for over 45 years. Because of going one day in March of 1972 mm-hmm. to take a tour of Elwood House. And I so fell in love.
And what about history is so fascinating to you?
The people. All the people, really, that they're involved with.
Stories, you know?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your history with NIU.
Where should I start? Spent 6.5 years, undergraduate and graduate work, living in Lincoln Hall, which hasn't been used now for 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. According to Don Buckner, who was director of housing for 25 years at Northern, mm-hmm. no student in modern times lived in a dorm as long as I have. I hold the record. It was 3 meals a day, didn't have a lot of things.
Perfect.
Nice small room.
You can come and go as you please.
Yeah. Got involved with, again, Newman Center and Residence Hall Council or Dorm Council in Lincoln Hall. The last semester that I lived in Lincoln, I was the hall president. how I got elected to hall council originally. Started my sophomore year, 1969. We had to elect a floor president and a floor vice president. The floor president attended hall council meetings. The vice president attended the dorm's scholarship committee meetings. And we actually filled out ballots for the competing candidates. But before the ballots were even counted, we held an inauguration of the president and vice president. Threw them both in the showers, did unspeakable things to them. Start a second semester, the floor president had to resign. He didn't make grades. So the RA told Larry Anderson, who was the president, the vice president, was the vice president that resigned. Larry Anderson was the floor president. The RA told him, we're not going to hold another election like the one you guys were elected in the fall. You know the people on the floor, decide who would be good to be vice president and on the scholarship committee. Larry and I knew one another from the Young Republicans Club. And he came to me and asked if I'd like to be vice president. And the following year, I got elected floor president. I kept being elected floor president until I became dorm president.
And then, so eventually you decided to live in DeKalb.
Yeah.
What made you decide that?
I was so in love with the history and the architecture of the town, and then initially DeKalb Sycamore, greater DeKalb County.
Is there anything else about NIU you'd like to talk about? I mean, obviously, you've seen NIU change enormously.
Lots of changes. The newest dorm at NIU my freshman year was Stevenson South. I saw Stevenson North built from the ground up. Oh. I saw the tower on the Home Student Center finished, not built from the start, but finished. Where Montgomery Hall and the psychology computer science buildings are, that was the Montgomery Arboretum. It had been the Arboretum from the time the school first opened in 1899, and then those two buildings got built there. And between Lincoln Highway and the lagoon, just off of Castle Drive, as you turn onto Castle Drive from Lincoln Highway, there's a small parking lot that was since removed and turned into green space on the south end of the lagoon. And the Martin Luther King Commons, south of the Student Center, was one big parking lot for several years when I was both an undergrad and a grad student.
They
and
then buildings they there too.
No, well, oh. they took some small houses down and converted the parking lot into green space. The architecture in general, though, from the time that Northern moved west of Normal Road, has not been the best. Unlike the U of I that kept Colonial Revival brick style of architecture, Northern went with a hodgepodge of stuff. Leslie Holmes, who the Home Student Center is named for, was the last president to have his office in Altgeld until John Peters in 2004. President's office was on the top floor of Loudoun.
I wonder why they took so long to restore Altgeld.
Money! The project was originally supposed to cost $19 million. They went way over budget. Fortunately, the now bankrupt state of Illinois could afford the $25 million that the restoration did cost. But my freshman year, there were still areas of Altgeld where classes were held. Had a math class the second semester of my freshman year on the third floor on the west end of Altgeld. The first semester of my freshman year, had an American history class in the auditorium with the original hard wooden seats. Biology class. My senior year, I did take a biology class to fulfill the science requirement. And the north wing of McMurray was originally intended to house the School of Nursing, which quickly outgrew that space. And subsequently, they moved to the old Roberts Elementary School at Normal Road and Ridge Drive.
Wow. If you could have had any other profession, what would it have been?
Had an anthropology class in the spring of 1973. James Gunnarsson, who started the Anthropology Museum on campus, was the professor. He had his PhD from Harvard. One of several professors that I had or knew that had PhDs from Harvard. He took our class on a field trip to Field Museum for a behind-the-scenes tour that staff that he knew conducted us on. And they took us into an office area where we took a test to see if we were cut out to be museum people. And I scored very highly on it, very, very highly on it. I would have loved to have worked in a museum. And actually, back in the mid or late 70s, I even applied to be the volunteer coordinator at Elwood House. And they said no.
Why wasn't that your first choice?
From the earliest that I can remember in grade school, just always wanted to be a teacher.
And specifically history? Or just teaching
in general? Just basically teaching in general. But then by the time I got to high school, I realized that history was what I was cut out for. My senior year, the only class I had that was not a history class was English. And I aced every history class. Nice. Made the honor roll three out of four semesters that year. I was always interested in archaeology. And took a lot of courses in the School of Art under Dimitri Liakos, who for 25 years was the head of the art history division of the School of Art. And he and his wife were both natives of Greece. He's now in his very late 80s, not in very good health anymore, but up until a year or so ago, was in regular contact with him. I took at least 7 art history courses under him, and one in the summer of 1973 that was just a 3-week course that he and his wife team taught. They both are radically different in their approaches to art history. They subsequently divorced. Their daughter, who's now in her early 50s, retired in her early 40s from Midwest Orthopedic Institute, where she was a foot surgeon. Fotini Liakos.
Early retirement.
Yeah.
Like,
she made her
a doctor.
Yeah. She has 2 children that I met the last time that one of her father's lectures was given at the School of Art.
What accomplishments are you the most proud of?
Probably the 3 years that I served as a member of the Illinois Historic Sites Advisory Council, the state review board that decides whether building structures, objects, whatever, around Illinois can be listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The advisory council meets 4 times a year in different locations around the state, so we're always going someplace except far southern Illinois. Always met either in northern Illinois or central Illinois, never down in southern Illinois. Down in Monticello, Illinois, midway between Champaign and Decatur, is the Robert Allerton Estate. He donated the mansion and property to the University of Illinois back in the 1940s. And one of our advisory council meetings was held in Monticello in December of 1999. And the director of Allerton Park attended the conference and invited all the people from the council for a private tour of the house, which was next to never open to the public at that time.
That must have been a great experience to be a part of that council.
Really, and Ann Swallow, who for 15 years was the Survey and National Register Coordinator for the state, had asked me in the fall of 1997, when the annual statewide historic preservation conference was in Galesburg, if I'd ever consider being a member of the council. I said I would be tremendously honored to be on the council. 2 months later, she called one day and said, "Remember our conversation at the Antique Mall in Galesburg where we were drinking so heavily and I asked you if you'd ever like to be on the advisory council?" I said, "Yes, I remember that very clearly." And she said, "How would you like to do it now?" 1998, 1999, 2000. And the last year, I was the vice chairman of the Illinois Historic Sites Advisory Council. I kept hoping that the chairman, who was from Rock Island, would not attend a meeting so that I could chair the council. But she never did. Oh, and up on Lake Geneva, there's a mansion on the north shore of the lake that was built in 1900 for Norman Harris of Harris Bank. It was originally known as Wadsworth Hall because he was a descendant, shirt-tailed descendant of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. The house changed hands in the early 1920s and remained in the second family until the early 2000s. One was put up for sale for $8 million. Huge brick Georgian Revival style mansion. Richard Driehaus, a Chicago billionaire, bought it for something less than $8 million and spent a fortune restoring and adding things to it. And I met him in DeKalb in June of 1994 at the Home Student Center when the City of DeKalb Landmark Commission, which I was chairman of during the 1990s, hosted the statewide Historic Preservation Conference. That was the year he started contributing funds for the Preservation Conference Awards. And so he was at the Saturday dinner in the Holmes Student Center Ballroom at the head table with me. Well, I was able to communicate with him. He owns at least 3 mansions in Chicago. One in the Gold Coast neighborhood that he lives in. One at Erie and Wabash Streets that he has his financial management office in. And one diagonally across the street from that, that was built in the early 1880s for Samuel Nickerson, which was known even in the 1880s as Nickerson's Marble Palace. And Driehaus has his decorative arts collection on display for the public to see in that building. I've been in there a number of times over the years, but not since he acquired it. Very anxious to somehow get there to see what he's got. Nickerson, if I remember right, left Chicago for New York or the East Coast around 1912, 1915, sold the house to Lucius Fisher, who owned a paper bag company. And when Fisher sold it, a group of prominent Chicago people, mostly millionaires, contributed to buy the house and gave it to the American College of Surgeons to use as their international headquarters in Chicago. And they continued to operate there until, I think it was the earlier mid-1990s, when Richard Love, American art dealer, acquired it from them and used it as a gallery of American art. And then Driehaus subsequently bought it from Love Galleries.
I've never been up to Geneva. I feel like I need to get up there. I need to see all the mansions up there.
They are to die for.
I can only imagine. They're amazing.
The Elwoods even had one near Williams Bay in the late 1920s until 1940. The Perry Elwoods supposedly honeymooned in Lake Geneva in 1898. From the time of the Chicago Fire in 1871, Chicago millionaires started building summer homes, summer cottages up there. And just about every big name in Chicago history had a summer home there.
Yeah.
The largest one, which is now condominiums, is called Stone Manor. It was built between about 1899 and 1901 for Otto Young, who owned a lot of valuable real estate in the Loop in Chicago, was a wholesale jewelry store owner, and part owner at one time in the Fair department store. He was worth $25 million when he died in 1906, spent $1 million building the house, which is 50 rooms on 5 floors. Two of the floors are basements below ground. Two retired doctors from Lake Forest bought the house some years ago, and they, in conjunction with another Chicago person, sunk millions into the restoration of it, and they have their living quarters on the entire first floor of the house, which was the most opulent. 12,000 square feet.
Well, Steve, is there anything else you'd like to share? Covered a lot.
Yes, we have.
Well, I'll go ahead and stop recording.